welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chops. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 61 of the Carpcast, in association with Clearwater Fisheries. A new sponsor of the show is Alex and the gang up at Clearwater Fisheries, which is the old Borwick complex at Carnforth in Lancashire. Alex's dreams are to turn the fisheries into the finest syndicate, certainly in the north and very probably in the country. Alex has told me his plans for the place, and it's fantastic, from landscaping the lakes, which have already got a decent stock of 30s, up to low 40s. There's a number of lakes on the complex. I think there's 6 or 7. He's knocking some of them into each other and landscaping them and planting stuff and loads of trees and developing the swims. And it's going to be an absolutely it already is a fantastic complex, and he's going to make it one of the best in the country. So if you've never visited, it's at Carnforth in Lancashire. You can get day tickets or you can get a season ticket. From November to November, which is now basically, for only £400. Carp to £40 in the Northwest. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. So get yourself over to the Clearwater Fisheries Facebook page and give them a message. Check everything out and then have a look. How are we doing, Mark?
We're not bad, although it's a Monday evening right now as we're recording. It's usually when I'm fishing. I've just driven back from the chiropractor with a great big bag full of chips, and it's showing 14 and a half degrees on my van. I'm thinking I've picked the wrong weekend to have a rest.
I totally agree. I had no plans to go fishing this week. Well, I should actually be fishing now. We're recording this on Monday evening, the day of the supermoon. I can confirm there might be a supermoon in the sky, but it's extremely drizzly, cloudy, and super warm outside. So I have no idea if there's a supermoon out there or not. I did see a quote actually today from a tweet from, do you know Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist expert geezer?
Not personally.
He's got his own podcast called Star Talk. He's a super interesting guy. He's been on loads of TV programs, and Joe Rogan podcast is a fantastic episode if you listen to that one, where they talk about moon landing conspiracies and all sorts. But he is he's the go-to media expert. He's a really likable character and pretty funny. But anything you see him on, I would advise to watch or listen, because he's brilliant. But he made a tweet today saying this moon, November's moon is only super I'm going to find the tweet because I'll get this wrong, and the guy's clever, so how he explains stuff is better. Twitter, I apologise for this, I should have had it up, but as we ramble,
why do we do planners?
Yeah,
just why? We've been going, 2 minutes? We've already
gone
taken
off topic,
a detour.
Yes. That's the beauty of this podcast.
Yeah, it is. Good one, though. I'm quite interested to see what our Astro Chum's got to say on his tweet.
Yeah. Why can I not see it, though?
Yeah.
He's put, tonight's supermoon is super versus October's full moon, only if you think 16.05-inch pizzas are super relative to 16-inch pizzas. So basically it's 0.05 of an inch bigger than it was last month, so I don't know how super that is, but I suppose for an astrophysicist it's a bit of a non-starter, but the media's having us believe it's super, but it's an absolute fraction bigger than it was last month. So
yeah, it's not a lot in the news happening at the minute, or they going on about the supermoon to distract us from Russia invading us or something bad.
Actually, it's something you'll like. Neil deGrasse Tyson's tweet below that supermoon one is about zombies. Star Talk Radio, which is his podcast, definitely worth a listen. Actually, we should put that in worth a look. Star Talk Radio's podcast, latest one, The Science of Zombies, is basically about the science behind zombies. And The Walking Dead. So, he's very pop culture-y. He relates astrophysics in a way you can understand. He's super entertaining. He's really worth listening to. If you've ever seen The Big Bang Theory, that program, he's had loads of guest appearances on that.
My wife loves that program, and it's just simple humor for simple people. Like most American sitcoms, it's just nothing. Like, just give me reruns of Only Fools and Horses or Porridge.
Well, I like all of those as well. Open All Hours, remember that one? That's showing our age.
Open All Hours, yeah. The actual shop is in Doncaster. It's in Doncaster, even when they remade it.
I say Granville. For those who don't know, David Jason out of Only Fools and Horses is very young in it. He's like the shop assistant, and
Ronnie Barker. I can't believe you don't know that.
Yeah.
Ronnie Barker.
Yeah, Ronnie Barker.
Genius.
Is the guy that was in Porridge. It was one of my favourite sitcoms as well. Yeah, he's the old dithering shopkeeper. Very old, but quite funny. They get shown on Gold all the time. But another worth a look for the young ones who've probably never heard of it and going, what are they talking about? Is this a fishing podcast? You're talking about pizzas, zombies, Walking Dead, and Big Bang Theory.
Well, let's be honest, we've both come across a few people. You know, nice people, don't get me wrong that I'm slating them, but some people who are just... all they talk about is fishing as all in their life, and the shallow people, there's no other way of putting it. I'd much rather be fishing with someone who we can just talk about, you know, festivals and adventures with dirty women, and in the past obviously I'm happily married, and just anything but fishing at times.
There is definitely more to life than fishing.
Yes, that's what I was
whether 1970s sitcom or some of them, I am not sure.
Yes, the area. Music's more one thing I think we're both quite interested in. So, how was your venture back up on the stage?
Yes, I did a gig this week. It was part of the honoured to be asked to be part of the Carp Society supergroup, which did a gig in aid of charity at the Circus Tavern in Essex, whose idea it was to put to start the event at rush hour on a Friday. In one of the busiest junctions in the country, I don't know, right at Thurrock by Dartford Crossing, but it was an extremely well organised event. I'm told there was about 250 people there, something like that, which is a lot less than the venue can take. It's a huge venue, has all sorts of stuff on there. Chubby Brown's on, Joe Longthorne, Darren Day, all the theatre stuff that they have in Blackpool constantly was all on. We rehearsed a set we'd never played before, changed a few songs around. So all the rehearsing that I did, trying to learn how to play the guitar once again from being an extremely competent guitarist 20 odd years ago, practicing 4 to 8 hours a day, every day of the week, from not picking it up for 15 years. So, but it all came back. I'm a pretty good busker. So, yeah, we did it. There is a live streamed video of it knocking about. I think we might even bring it out again at the Northern Angling Show. Northern Angling Show's on the 1st and 2nd of April 2017, where it's been previously at Event City in Manchester. And this year, I think we're going to have a little bit of a party on the Saturday afternoon, sort of 4 p.m.-ish. I think we're going to get some stuff on the stage, including the Carp Society Super Band. We're going to have a bit of a drink till 9, 10 o'clock at night on the Saturday. We're just in negotiations to get bars and stuff put in there. But yeah, we're going to build a nice, decent bar area in the... because we're in the new hall now. We're in the show's got massively bigger. If you've been to the Northern Angling Show previously, it's going to be a lot larger. It's going to be a rock band. Clive Gibbons has a band from Hull who plays pretty regularly. He's an extremely accomplished musician. It was a pleasure to see him again, and he's a very solid drummer. His band are going to play. They're going to do a bit of a rock set, not rock set but a rock set, doing... they do loads of stuff, Thin Lizzy, quite a bit of well-known rock stuff. So they're going to do it. Carp Society Super Band's going to play as well. Myself, Lee Jackson, Terry Cheeseman, and we're going to have a right good party, I think. You'll be there, won't you, Mark?
Yep, I'll be starting the mosh pit.
Yeah, get some headbanging done. If you are interested, by the way, in the Northern Angling Show, there are a load of VIP tickets you can get. If you want to guarantee getting in early on the Saturday, which is basically an hour before anybody else, then you need to buy one of the pre-sale tickets, which you can get from northernanglingshow.co.uk. Go to our website, click on tickets and special offers. There is a countdown timer on there telling me that it's 137 days, 13 hours and 1 minute and 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second, oh, 30. Anyway, there is a countdown timer that tells you exactly where it is so you don't forget. If you click on the tickets and special offers, you'll see that there are basically a load of VIP bundles where you get the ticket absolutely free. And some nice kit. So do you remember the Wafty Lads that had the DJ set up there last year, Mark?
How can I forget?
Yes, right by our Carpcast stand, blasting music out all day. Wafty are doing a clothing offer. You get a Wafty olive camo hoodie, olive or camo hoodie, any size, which normally is £40. You get a Wafty beanie hat in three different colours, which are normally £12.99. And you get a ticket for entry to the show, which is valued at £10. And you also get automatic entry to an exclusive NAS competition. And you get early entry into the venue. The total value of that bundle is £62.98. And you can get it for £40. So if you're going to get a Wafty hoodie and hat anyway, then you may as well get it and get a free ticket and save yourself £20. There's a Nash citrus package as well. We're going to talk about the citrus cultured hook baits shortly, Mark. Bait Wars has just started on Facebook today, thanks to Mark Holmes. But there's basically a citrus pack. You get a load of Nash stuff. You get a citrus cultured hook baits, cultured fizzing stick mix, citrus bottom baits, a kilo of 10s, a kilo of 15s, some 10mm pink pop-ups, 15mm pink pop-ups, an NAS ticket, valid Saturday or Sunday, a Nash 2016 DVD, entry to the Northern Angling Show competition again. Total value £62.94. You can get it all for £40. You'll see there's a theme here. All the packages are valued around £60 to £70, and they're all £40. There's a CC Moore bundle, which is their hot chorizo and a Pacific tuna. In fact, there's two different CC Moore ones. And there is one with the Northern Angling Show clothing as well. There is going to be a couple of new sort of course and match ones as well going up, but they're the ones at the minute. northernanglingshow.co.uk, tickets and special offers. Go and get yourself a VIP ticket to get in. And I believe the party on the Saturday night is going to be free. So you'll obviously have to be at the show to be able to get into the party, but it's going to be a right good needs up with a load of fishing celebrities. Get yourself northernanglingshow.co.uk and get that sorted. Once again, Mark, I deviated from the planner. Northern Angling Show was not even in there, was it? But we were talking about a super group who are going to make an appearance.
Yeah, I think it was a skillful segue into that. Well done.
It was, yes. Notice the seamless link. let's move on to a couple of things that we've actually spoke about there. Bait Wars. You seen a post from Mark Holmes today by any chance?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I have, yes. He mentions his DNA evolution hook base, and he doesn't mention any names, but he's a bit upset that they've in his words been copied.
Yeah, he's seems to be referring to the launch of the Nash Citrus cultured hook baits, which they have basically like a paste around the bait that breaks down in the water. I believe the technology used to do this is like a liquid that hardens. I'm not exactly sure you make it, but I think I've been told at Nash that it's some sort of liquid, and it's basically like it's basically paste around a boilie. The DNA for a while have been doing the cured Evo hook baits. Apparently Mark's been using them for 5 years. Yeah, apparently Mark's been using them for 5 years. Now, I've been using the Nash cultured hook baits. They are not new. I don't know why Mark's got upset. today just because of all the PR that's knocking about of obviously the new, you know, they're very fruity citrus flavoured hotbakes. Not sure why he's got upset today, because these have been around, you know. Nash, well, I caught the 50 last January on a cultured hotbait, on the key cultured hotbait. In fact, both those big ones I had out of the Cops Lake, the 51, the 48, were both on key cultured hookbait. So it's not like Nash have just released them. You know, it's not like him and Kevin are enemies or anything. So, I mean, a company that makes boilies being upset about somebody else copying one of their boilies. So they say it's a copy. I don't know the technology in either, how it's made. It may or may not be coffered, I don't know, but it essentially appears to me to be paste round a boilie. Well, I was certainly using paste round a boilie a long, long time ago, number one. Number two, you're talking about a company that's, you know, a quality company that's supported the Carpcast for a long time, that's appeared in the last 5 years, that make boilies. Well, boilies are not original, are they? Let's be honest. Boilies are, you know, probably 30 years ago you might have got some credibility for inventing the boilie, but not now. So I don't really know. What do you think?
It's, well, to try and, you know, simplify the situation, a side view of it is, if you're going to come out with a product, you know, like a fishing bait, you know, it's so generic that you're never going to get a patent on it. So it's only a matter of time before it's going to get copied or a similar products coming out. So in that situation, all you have to do is make yours better and market it better. You know, there's no point moaning. It's going to happen. Live with it and evolve, compete.
Maybe that's the key to it. Excuse the pun. Is the reason why Mark's upset is because, you know, Nash, a big company, they're doing a very good job of marketing it. They've hammered social media in the last couple of days with these citrus cultured hookbaits and the fizzing stick mix. But they've been, you know, they've been hammering on about the cultured hookbaits for a year. And to be fair, I didn't realise that the Evo baits that DNA do, I actually didn't realise that they were the same as cultured, that they have a coating that break down. I remember finding that out about after I'd already been using the Nash cultured baits, you know, a year ago. So, and I don't know how long DNA have had them about, you know, but I can't actually see the problem here. I can't, you know, I like DNA, they do some absolute quality stuff. Lots of my friends use their bait, very happy with them, you know, catch lots of fish on them. Incidentally, our support from DNA has ended this week. We'd like to thank DNA for the year and a bit of support from them. I think it's 13 months, is it, or something?
It's something around that, yeah. So, yeah, thanks to, you know, Jace and everyone at DNA. It's been appreciated.
Yeah, we do. We thank them very much. They're our first ever sponsor on the Carpcast. We will be replacing them very soon. We get inundated with advertising requests, and we have to kind of be quite careful about what we do advertise, because I wouldn't advertise something that I wouldn't use myself. That's you know, I'd be more than happy if I didn't have an arrangement with Nash. I'd be more than happy using the DNA baits. It's quality gear. You know, a lot of the bait companies that approach us might sell decent bait, but, you know, I can't vouch for it. I don't use it and probably would never use it. So, you know, it's no offence to those relative companies, but I wouldn't advertise something on here that I can't endorse myself. But we will, we've got quite a few companies at the minute looking to advertise. Obviously, the Gifts for Anglers are back on this year with Christmas coming up. We'll run through all the great products that they have in a little bit. I can't see what Holmes is, I can't see what the drama's about, to be totally truthful. It's, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel here, are we?
No, we're catching carp, you know, and that's it. You know, both, you know, the Key and the Evo, both great products, both catch a lot of carp. So,
yeah, and I've got to be honest, I was shown the cultured hookbaits on one of the trips down Nash's about a month ago, and I absolutely loved them. It gives off a really milky cloud in the water. The fizzing stick mix comes alive when you put it in the water. It's really fruity and tangy, and I like it, to be honest. So, It's, I can't say a lot. I haven't actually used the Evo Hook baits, and I was actually, you know, I was surprised when I found out that they were, you know, a similar type of thing, like paste round a boilie type thing that breaks down, because I didn't know. And, you know, maybe a bit annoyed about the fact that maybe one company's done a better job of marketing something. I don't know, but you know, Holmes has always had a good relationship with Nash, so I'm quite surprised to see him come out like this. He's not actually named Nash yet, but it's pretty obvious that that's what he's talking about, and other people have said Nash in the thread. He's not confirmed or denied, and obviously we know that the launch of the Cultured on social media has happened in the last 2 days, so, and nobody else has. So I don't know, but as I said, the key Cultured hook baits have been out for I've been using them for over a year, so Lord knows how long they've been around before that. But anyway, something else on the net, Mark, something that I didn't we forgot to mention in last week's show.
You did the rod license changes.
Yeah,
it's on the net, it must be true.
What's your opinions? Basically, we now have the 3-rod license, which anglers have been calling for a long time. A lot of lakes I've fished over the last few years allow you to use 4 rods, so does that mean I can use 6 now?
If you buy 2 3-rod licenses, yes. Well, you use 6 anyway, let's be honest.
Yeah. 6. I wonder what the record is for the amount of rods put out.
I don't know. If you do get a Gary Bayes on, I think he might have the answer.
I did it, yeah. I'll be careful what I say here, but yeah. Multiple rods have been used. I don't know what the record is. I'm sure
it was well within the country's bylaws.
Of course. So basically, the government have decided to listen to the anglers. I've seen this posted on the Angling Trust page. Essentially, there is now a 3-rod license. Kids are now free, which
that's probably the best change out of the lot.
Yes, let me get the fishing license structures up here. For a standard 3-rod license, it's £45. For a normal course and trout license, which it doesn't say if that's 1 rod or 2, I would assume it's 2, and it's from the 1st of April 2017, it's £30. Concessionary license is £20. Juniors 12 to 16 are now free, which I think is a great move by the EA to encourage youth into fishing. Juniors are also free, or 12s and under are also free at the Northern Angling Show. And 3-rod license is £45, and concessionary 3-rod license is £30. Salmon and sea trout as well. There are licenses for those, and the juniors. And the juniors are free. So, I mean, is this a price hike? I couldn't even tell you how much the rod licenses were. One other thing that I've noticed is that the ticket runs, well, the rod license runs from a year from when you buy it, which I think is great, because it definitely put people off buying a rod license. If you went fishing for the first time that year, and, you know, like, it's a month before the license ends, so let's say that the license started April to April, which I think it used to, didn't it? If you don't have a license, you want to go fishing in March, you're actually going to go and buy 2 rod licenses to fish 3 rods for literally one session and then have to buy them again. You're probably not going to bother, are you? Let's be honest. You're going to risk it. So yeah. I think it's a good move for it to be a year from the date you buy it. And it's nice to see that anglers are being listened to, or certainly carp anglers, you know, one of the biggest forms of angling these days. So we'll get Rob Hughes on at some point as well. He knows all things official. In his role, he works with the Angling Trust in his capacity for Sport England and stuff. So, I think that'll be good. Have you seen anything else?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I have, yes. And this is one that's going to spark quite a bit of discussion between us and everyone else. Angling Times have revealed the nominees for their Carp Angler of the Year. amongst all the other various awards. So I've got them in front of me now. I'm going to run through them all, and then we'll discuss who we think. I know who I'd like to vote for, but then that's just my opinion. First nominee, we've got Mark Bartlett, who we mentioned him before on the Cardcast. At one point in 2016, he was a reigning British, European and world champion, something no one else has done.
Yeah.
The next nominee, Tom Doherty, caught Britain's biggest calf with a capture of Big Rig from the Avenue, which was, once scales were verified, was £69.13.
Yeah.
Next we have Dean Fletcher, who created the first new cart record in nearly 8 years by, he caught the parrot from Wading. Remember that one back in January?
Yes.
68. I think two-tone had been the record for about, 8 years.
Yeah.
You've got Robbie Harrison. He also caught Big Rig, which by then, had, after dropping to, I believe, about 67, had grown and was 71 when he caught it. Is someone I believe you know, or have fished alongside, Lewis Reed.
Yeah.
He works with Gardner. On limited time, he's had 15 40s from Wellington Country Park, including 9 over 48.
Wow.
Also having caught 40s from two other waters. And we know, catching a lot of big fish from welly is just, it's just welly it's got there, but still.
40s don't count from there.
Well, 59 over 48.
Like 20 50s. If you had nine fish over 48 pounds and no 50s, you'd be pretty sick, wouldn't you?
Yeah. He must have had 50, surely.
Well, it doesn't say.
I don't know.
Say loads of 50s, does it?
No. But speaking of 50s, the next nominee, Ian Stotts, a previous guest of ours. He'd arguably the finest winter campaign with 5 50s in 5 months. The biggest being just over 59.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Yeah, the last nominee, Dan Taylor, one of the most consistent big carp anglers, and in the last 12 months he's had 8 40s, 2 50s and a 60, since November last year from the Essex Manor and Wingham, which I believe is a Kent syndicate. So, wow.
So
your opinions?
The controversial one on there is Tom, friend of the Carpcast, who through no fault of his own hooked a carp that had been dropped in there 6 weeks before at over record weight, and is all of a sudden up for Carp Angler of the Year for catching that fish. I'm sure that the Angling Times must be trolling us, because I don't understand. They must just be trying to cause controversy. I mean, I'm pretty sure Tom wouldn't put himself up for Carp Angler of the Year. I mean, Carp Angler of the Year, carp fishing is not a competition unless you're match fishing, but I do believe that meritorious seasons should be, they should be remembered. They should be, marked in some way. Sorry?
Should get that bit of recognition they deserve. And while, Tom does deserve the headlines he's already had for catching that fish. Carp Angler of the Year? No. And I'd put Robbie Harrison, who caught the same fish at 71, in the same category.
I mean,
they don't compare to Mark Bartlett's achievement or Lewis Reed.
No, or Ian Stott, lots and lots of carp anglers around the country, if you get an Avenue ticket, we know how fish get caught fairly easily when they've been put in new surroundings. When they get moved or whatever, they quite often get caught immediately. Was there a skill factor to his capture? No. Did he enjoy it? I'm sure he did, and good luck to him for enjoying the capture. But should you be nominated up there with the top anglers of the year? No, and I can only assume Angling Times are trying to cause some sort of controversy here, because nobody in their right mind would think that.
Either that, or they've just gone back. I don't know who has made these nominations, but it wouldn't surprise me if it is someone who is not a carp angler and has just gone back, looked at the year's headlines.
I don't know, but you're not going to get an argument from me out of this. It's just a bit daft.
Yeah, so who would... If you had to pick, I won't say one, that's probably unfair, but if you had to pick three, what would you go for?
I mean, Ian Stott's 550s is something that's going to go down in history. You know, he had 550s, one per month, in every month through winter. It was like November, December, January, February, March. I mean, that is incredible. I know the lake's got him in, but that, I mean, even to catch a quarter of any lake's A team in the winter is newsworthy. And, you know, I remember John Mack did it on Raysbury one year, but it, and that, you know, still goes down in history, as should that. I mean, you know, Dean Fletcher as well, who caught the British record, a proper British record that had been, you know, held there for years. I mean, that's a great capture. I mean, I'm pretty sure, as a lot of people don't realise, that was caught with the bait boat, that fish. It doesn't get publicised as such. I mean, I'm not saying there's no skill to using a bait, but there certainly is. We spoke about this before. You know, is it, you know, catching that fish that swims in that lake, catching that one fish on a bait boat, is that as recognisable as the 550s across winter? I'm not sure. I'd still go with Ian Stott, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think, you know, Dan Taylor at the bottom, you aren't seeing, you know, catching, I say, 840s, 250s and a 60 from two lakes. You know, Lewis Reed, you again, has also spanked at Welly with 40s from two other waters as well on his limited time. We know he works.
Yeah, that's a fantastic result as well.
Yeah, and also on a different part of the carp angling, Mark Bartlett with his achievements in match fishing.
Yeah, certainly.
You know.
Certainly. I mean, there's lots of worthy, I'm glad I'm not voting, lots of worthy
I'm going to vote
people there. So, I mean, how much relevance do Angling Times have in the carp world anymore, if any?
Probably not a lot, I'll be honest. I used to buy it regular along with the mail when I was, well, before I got into carping, because I wanted to catch more than my mates on the canal every weekend. Before I got into carping, then it was you know, shortly after that Carp Talk launched. And then that was Carp Talk. Carp Talk was my Bible when it used to be printed on, well, what was basically bog roll.
I don't know. Talking of Carp Talk and carp fishing news, they have a company called Gifts for Anglers, which is the perfect time of year to be thinking about those Christmas presents and stuff. Or if you want books, DVDs, anything, they have the largest online shop for fishing books, DVDs and gifts. They stock hundreds of carp books and DVDs, from the latest releases to old age favourites. They also stock clothing, headwear from top brands such as Fox Chunk, Fatfish, Navitas, Tracker, Corda, Mainline, Nash, Fortis and Monkey Climber. Recent additions, they've got the latest Corda hats, t-shirts and sunglasses, latest Tracker autumn and winter headwear collection, full collection of the Monkey Climber apparel. There's hundreds of carpy and angling related gifts, perfect for Christmas and birthday presents. There's stuff like socks, mugs, personalised front covers and carp shaped pillows, of which I like and have one. They're also stockists of the Ridge Monkey and Tracker bankside cooking accessories. The new Fisher Flage logbooks are perfect for anglers who like to keep a detailed log of their session, and they make a perfect gift at just $9.99. You can get them in carp or pike. So, you know, if your dad's a predator angler or whatever and you want to buy him a gift, that nice little logbook there. Obviously, Crowey's Adventures of a Carp Angler, fantastic doorstop of a book. Dave Levy's Fallen Kings, Every Bit of Blue by our favourite Frank Warwick, and all the subsurface collected books are in there. There's reprints of the latest Rod Hutchinson classic books, Carp Strikes Back, Carp Now and Then, and also his new books, Thoughts on Bait and the Carp Scene Years. If you're a fan of Rod Hutchinson and his writing, then these are a must add to your collection. There's a sales section in there as well, loads of DVDs, books, gifts and clothing with mega reductions and reduced to clears, such as History of Carp Fishing by Kevin Clifford, the Bible for anybody interested in carp fishing history, for £30, and it was £40. Chris Ball's Best of the Famous Catches is only £7.99, it was £26. Forgotten Chapters, Gaz Fairham, is £25, and it was £30. There's many other top carp titles reduced, such as Basil's Bush, Fox Pool and Tiger Bay. Gifts for Anglers are offering all Carpcast listeners a 10% discount off all purchases made at gifts 4anglers.co.uk. That's gifts, the number 4anglers.co.uk. If you enter CARPCAST10 at the checkout, when you bought something, you will get an extra 10% off, and it's valued until the 31st of January. They've got a Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Gifts for Anglers. But don't forget, if you're going to buy something or buy a gift there, they've been very generous this year and offered a 10% discount off all the stuff. Giftsforanglers.co.uk. Are you going to be buying any prezzies this year, Mark?
I don't know. To be honest, the only thing, only person I have to buy for is the wife, and she just takes care of everything else. So the wife doesn't really appreciate fishing gifts. All I know is she wants a Lego Death Star.
We spoke about this once before, yeah. Well, why not get her every bit of Blue Life Frank Warwick at the same time?
I'm sure she'd have... Well, I might actually save her money, because I have, right at the side of me, Simon Crowe's book. I might just save some money, wrap this up and give it her.
Yeah, well, definitely.
I've got to do this, because you did it several times last time round. You ready? What a book.
It's a chunk, isn't it? It's an absolute chunk. By the way, check out VIPCarpHolidays.com. It's a holiday company who I'm working with. Holidays more suitable for taking the missus or the family, the kids or whatever. There is 3 venues currently on the website, and just about to add another couple, but it's not confirmed just yet. But a holiday with a difference. It's absolute paradise. It's on the river lot, right down in the south of France. So it's warm even through the winter. It's very warm down there. It's extremely warm in the summer. If you ever fancied not going to a pretty normal commercial overstocked French Lake, and you fancy a holiday with a bit of difference, then why not try the River Lot? There's a big section of bank that's completely private in the grounds of a beautiful villa with an outdoor pool. I mean, what better way than to get the missus fishing, or on a fishing holiday where you can fish, you can sunbathe, enjoy the French villages, the surrounding areas. You can fish straight off the lawn. It's owned by Jim Lightfoot, who's bought it recently, a very accomplished European angler who knows his stuff. He's also available for guides if you want it. He has a cruiser where if you just fancy going on your own, Jim will fish with you. He'll drive the boat, take you down the river lot. You can have a really interesting holiday if you haven't got a missus or anyone to travel with. And you fancy going, then Jim will take you on a guided trip. If you've got some boat experience, he will let you and a friend use the boat yourself, but you've got to prove to him that you've got some sort of boat experience, because it's a pretty expensive cruiser, but it's all geared up to fish straight off it. Tackle can be provided down there, so you can just fly, but the villa is fantastic. I mean, it's perfect for two angling families, basically. The villa sleeps 6 people comfortably. There's catfish to £100 in there. There's carp to £60. It's extremely good for other species, all the predator lure fishing and stuff. It's got big everything. It's in a non-flood area, so there's no danger of booking a holiday and then finding out that the river's in flood or anything, because it's completely in a non-fish area. Like I say, huge catfish, huge carp, general all-round course fishing. You must have a license it's a public fishery, the river, obviously, so but you can get them at local cafes and stuff, just basically like our rod license. There's plenty of fishing during the day, although you'd need blackleads and stuff just to make sure that it leads it down. I will hopefully be there at some point over the winter. I'm going to go with Jim, and I know he had a big hit last week. He was catching 3 or 4 fish a night. I saw him kept posting pictures up on his Facebook. But there's loads of facilities there as well. It's got the pool. It's got the villa's got its own terrace, which stretches the full width of the house, so you can sit and watch the river from there. It's a 9x4 meter swimming pool right next to the villa. There's TV, DVD player, loads of movies over there. There's a games room. It's got a full-size table, tennis table in there. There's bikes provided, so you can go cycling around the village, or there's bike tracks just down the side of the villa along the river. There's canoes provided as well, and obviously boats and stuff for fishing. It's fantastic. It's 70 metres of private bank along there, and it's near a nice little French village. You can go out to the local cafes, boulangeries, to get the customary French stuff. And it's absolutely beautiful. It's a holiday with a difference, and you can book that at vipcarpholidays.com or get any extra info you need about it. Also on there is Saint Amand, which is a place a number of our Carpcast listeners visited last year. It's the same sort of deal, although it's a lake and not a river. There's a 4.5 acre private lake that's absolutely stuffed full of fish. We've got quite a lot of 40s in there, expected to do its first 50 this year. It's absolutely run city over there. If you take your kids or whatever, they're going to catch a lot of fish. Ben Smethurst, Carpcast listener, visited last year and actually did a blog. He did an audio blog, which is on Carpcast 43, is it, Mark?
48, the Steve Briggs episode.
Ah, the Steve Briggs episode, Carpcast 48. You can hear Ben on the bank of St. Amand himself. Again, St. Amand comes with a fantastic farmhouse. There's a 4.5 acre spring-fed lake, which is yours. It's private. It's just a short walk from the farmhouse. It's stunning, amazing views in the area. Again, it's in the Limoges region of France. It's stuffed full of fish. You're definitely going to catch a lot of carp. There's a 170-year-old stone-built house. It's maintained to a very high standards with lots of original features for a truly authentic French experience. The views from the upper level of the house are just breathtaking. You can sleep up to 8 people in the house. Got shower, toilet facilities, large open plan farmhouse kitchen with butler sink, gas oven, hob, fridge, freezer, microwave, living room with satellite TV, leather sofas, dining room table. There's a wood burner in there for the colder months. It's got 4 double bedrooms, kitted out with everything, wardrobes, bedside table, chest of drawers, all that. There's a games lounge again. Again, it has a table tennis table in there and darts and all sorts of stuff. So there's plenty of fish to be caught in the day on there. That's what Ben was doing. He was fishing in the day and chilling with his family at night in the farmhouse, just doing all the games and everything. There's a large barn there as well, equipped for dry and wet tackles, chest freezer for your bait, boilies, party calls. There's a guide over there to help you do everything. And basically, what a fantastic holiday for you, the family, or you and two families, you know, you and your mate and partners and kids. There's plenty of room. Again, get yourself to VIP Carp Holidays to check that out. And again, I'm definitely going there this year. I've got to have a few foreign holidays this year, Mark. You up for a little trip somewhere? A little road trip?
Maybe. I'll never say never, though I've got to be honest, I'll be spending quite a few quid on my syndicate next year, so I intend to spank it as much as I can. Spending every, you know where I'm off to. Already sent the deposit off. So I'm not sure if it'd be any good for recording down there, being right at the side of the A14, but we can give it a go.
Yeah. Well, I had a chat with Kevin Nash earlier. It's always good to get Kevin on. He loves the Carpcast and likes coming on very regularly. So let's get Kevin in with the Nash debate. So I'd like to welcome back to the Carpcast Mr. Kevin Nash for the Nash Debate. How are we today, Kevin?
I'm good, Jamie. I'm good for the morning of continuing writing the book. I think I've mentioned them on the second book.
Yeah.
Memories of Carp Fisher, book two, although the subtitle's not been decided yet. Yeah, 3/4 of the way through that, doing the heavy stuff now. This is going to be a lot more technical based.
You did remind me, actually, that we were going to sell your first book through the Carpcast shop. That's something we can still do, is it?
I forgot all about that. You're absolutely welcome to. Yeah, there's no better time than Christmas. 90% of book sales seem to be around Christmas. So, yeah. Go on, pal. Make yourself some money.
Yeah, we'll discuss that one afterwards, yeah. But, yes, keep an eye in the Carpcast shop and you will see a fantastic book. And you're saying this second one's going to be a lot more intricate, what, rigs and technical and bait and stuff, is it?
Basically, as you know, the first one started with my childhood going through to early 90s. And my theme was to try and illustrate to anglers, you have to go for an apprenticeship. You know, so the theme of the book was picking waters, where I hope there's a bit of a yarn, an amusing story, at least in some part, but mainly to show the learning curve we went through, you know, and get anyone's understanding. And don't just watch Danny, that's not a knock at Danny, on, you know, on a video, and see what he does and believe that you'll be able to go out and catch as many as Danny has. You know, he's left down to a lot of experience. But, you know, I think the point of that statement I just said is that anglers, if you like, get the wrong impression of carp fishing, so, you know, they follow what they read or see and don't get the results, and, you know, they get disillusioned and leave the sport. So the purpose of the book was trying to show people, you know, this is how it is. You've got to go through that apprenticeship, you know, learn about carp and all that. So this second book really starts with the mid-90s, which probably the most successful period of fishing I had in my life, where everything come together. That's when the blowback rig with the tube was invented, and, you know, a lot of stuff. And I really, really felt that I had learned after 20 years and understood carp. And, you know, basically, it doesn't sound cocky, but I believe, you know, from that period of learning and go anywhere in the UK or the world and, you know, crack whatever challenge was put in front of me. But I'm writing about a particular lake that I won't divulge, and I just got to the point with a story and thought, that's it, I'm not going to write any more of my journey, because I think I've concluded it, you know, with that statement I just said. At that point, I just felt that I was at a stage in my carp fishing understanding where I could go anywhere and catch them, and I didn't want to just keep on, you know, like so many books are about went to water and conquered. So I stopped there, but then I thought, well, kind of like to put more words in, make it a great, you know, a sufficiently sized book to give them a value for money. So book two within this book, I've titled The Knowledge, and I'm going back over basically what I learnt in carp fishing, you know, from over that 20-year period to where, you know, where I've got to, really. You know, the key lessons that I'm kind of saying, if you read this, if you understand this and you apply this, you'll be able to go to any water today and catch them.
Yeah, I like the idea of that. I mean, I've been debating with the ideas, you know, of writing a book, and that, you know, I came here and caught that, conquered the water, as you say, caught that fish, moved on to the next. It feels a little bit narcissistic and a little bit boring. I don't know if I'd want to read that.
Jamie, frankly speaking, that is the majority of carp books that are written. You know, and I find them boring. You know, and, you know, so I don't want to know about your bloke's ego or whatever, what he's called, because at the end of the day, if anyone puts enough time into carp fishing and they've got the mechanics right, yeah, they're always going to catch a big fish or a number of big fish. And so, to me, it's about a bit like what carp cast does. You know, I know I've said it before, but I think it's a great medium, because you actually get into the guy who got the guest's head. You know, and that's what I've tried to do with my book, you know, really, you know, get into my head, you know, and then take out with what you will. You know, at the moment, I'm writing the rig chapter. I've been on it 3 days now, and I've still only got to about 5,000 words. Well, I'm a prolific writer. I used to knock out my those Cart World articles, Thoughts and Message Monastery. They was 4,000 or 5,000. I've knocked them out in the morning, mate. But I'm really struggling. Not so much struggling, but taking the care to get the detail and the processes of why I believe rigs work spot on. But even at times I have to pause, you know, to get it right in your head, because I guess you do something enough, you do it naturally, you know, and you just forget, you know. So the challenge and why this chapter takes so long is to put it in a clear way, in a clear order, so, you know, the reader, you know, the one person who buys it, you know, will understand it and get something from it, and hopefully then go out and it's going to, you know, make a difference to his fishing.
I'd love to have, I'm itching to get into this conversation, but I know we're going to save that for the next time with Roger Bacon, who's got a lot of thoughts on rigs. I'm dying to say a few things now, but I'm going to hold back and wait for our proper rig debate that I know we've all got some opinions on.
Well, that's going to have to be part one, two, and possibly three. That's all I can say on that one.
Moving on. I'm sure you've heard, because I've been getting emails and talking to people and experiencing it myself. Not an excuse for blanking, but what on earth's going on with our fisheries? Well, what's happened to all the fish?
Confession.
Me.
And I'll put it this way. Yeah, I've been running fisheries actually since my 20s. People don't know that, but I've made it my life's work with these two lakes, and I've always said, if you want to understand carp or you have a problem with a fishery, ask people who've gone through it. And I thought I was pretty knowledgeable on the subject. Now I've not got a clue. there's lakes, as you say, all up and down the country not fishing. I'm hearing mad stories of fishery owners wondering if there's a problem with their fish because nothing's been out for weeks when it normally would be. Royston went for a pier where I think there was only two fish out a couple of weeks ago. But where this is going, which is really, really scaring me, is I had a good conversation with a dear friend of mine, Steve O'Rourke, a couple of nights ago. Point of reference, he owns a manor and a commercial called Slough House. Yeah. Last weekend, luckily, his partner went over there and all the carp were gasping on the top.
Yeah.
So they set to, got the pumps going. Well, I always used to switch my pumps off basically as soon as the weather started cooling early September. Then several years ago, we had an oxygen crash third week of September, which stunned me. I've never seen it that late. Water's cooling down, oxygen's better. So as a result, I run the pumps now, to early October. However, we've got a massive algae bloom. Mm. Stunning again, having an algae bloom at the end of October. So I'm keeping the pumps running. And certainly talking to a couple of fishery owners who run me up, they are definitely suffering from algae blooms. Couple other elements here before I get on to the one that is I just can't get my head around. With a day ticket lake, you have potentially another problem. And this for sure has impacted on some waters recently. And that's one that they're getting ammonia build up because of rotten bait on the bottom. You're on a syndicate lake and it's not fishing, generally your members know that, and so they back off on the amount of bait they're putting in. But on a day ticket lake, it's a new angler every day, and you bet the majority of them don't check on keeping touch with the water, and so they just assume they can still put their 1, 2, or 3 or whatever kilo of board is in, which has gone on top of the previous guy and the previous guy and the previous guy. So before you know, we have got a semi-pollution situation. That's definitely been happening because I know of a couple of waters where the carp has suddenly got sores. Right, the one that I would welcome anyone's insight onto, in fact I was going to ring up Denise Brewster, in my opinion one of the best fishery scientists in the country, because this has absolutely done my head. When Steve's had this oxygen crash, it's set to, got the pumps going, and immediately the carp have gone down to where the pumps are. That afternoon, there was a match booked, and the match happened, and they was catching bream a chuck. Now, anyone who knows about fish know that the first ones, or the ones that are most sensitive and likely to die, are pike and bream. So how come the carp have got an oxygen problem, but the bream haven't? I'm out of my depth now, Jamie. There's so many things going on, and I suspect, for example, the algae blooms, week prior to the one that's just gone, it was 18, 19 degrees here at the farm. Then in a week, it went down to like 6, 7 degrees. So
yeah,
I would suspect that that high level temperature so late in the year has created the algae bloom. But as I say, some of these other things going on, like why bream are feeding when carp are struggling to get enough oxygen, is beyond my understanding. It really is
We've had minus ones in Blackpool the last couple of days. It's been really, really cold. I've seen, you know, super icy shots of people fishing. I remember a number of years ago, I was fishing the Woolpack, and the lakes 5 and 6 there are very small. They're only a few acres with like an island kind of down the middle separating them, surrounded by trees. So typical kind of small lake, you know, doesn't get all the wind and activity. But I remember one November on there, the same thing, the fish being on the surface at like 5-6 o'clock in the morning, the lake fishing rubbish, fish rubbish all autumn and winter. And it was very similar conditions to what we've got now. The summer was late. We never really got that autumn feed, you know, those nice autumnal weather with the warm southwesterlies and even warm easterlies with, you know, gale force winds. Didn't get any of that. It went straight from summer to really cold and frosts and stuff, and exactly the same thing happened. The fish were on the surface like 6 a.m. every morning, and it was like 2 degrees 3 degrees, and it had to be. I think I even mentioned this when we had Simon Scott on the show last year, you know, I was telling him about that situation there, and he said it's definitely a lack of oxygen in the water.
Yeah, you're saying small lakes, old lakes mature, that could be rotting leaves, but absolutely, an indication of low oxygen is first thing in the morning, as you know, lakes, match lakes, for example, they always fish better in the afternoon, because there's been more sun and oxygen generation, but yeah, that's definitely pointing towards deoxygenation. It could have, that case you're talking about could be through, like I said, lots of leaves going into water and rotting it.
And it seems
what happens with the algae blooms. And when you've got the algae, you ain't got the worry. It's looking at when it starts dying. And that's when you need max attention to it and the oxygen.
Yeah.
Because that's when it sucks up the oxygen from the lake.
And it is a common theme. I mean, one of the advantages of social media is we keep in touch with what's going on. And I'm seeing people doing, you know, saying the same things. All the fish are on the surface on my lake. You know, I've seen that a number of times over the last couple of weeks. And people are catching them off the surface. And people are catching them off the surface as well. But the odd lake is fishing really well. That's the bit that always confuses me. There are fish getting caught from individual lakes.
Can I make two observations there? If fish are struggling to get oxygen and people are catching them off the top, then that is absolutely unacceptable. Basically, they're putting their hook in the way of a carp who's gasping for air and inadvertently sucking that bait in while he's trying to survive. Yeah, that is very bad practice. But
yeah,
you're right, some waters are fishing their socks off, you know, because I'm so on, you know, it's a bit relevant that I'm so switched on to what's happening around the country water, more so than normal because of Key Cray. You know, we're continuing to tweak it to get this bait so awesome and awesomer that, yeah, I'm on the lads, how's it going, and you know, some lads are smashing lakes, whereas others, you know, just can't buy a bite.
Yeah, it's weird.
No one, no one else on them. You know, I say, what? You know, you think there's a problem with the bait? I say, no one's catching, you know?
In defence of the people that I've known have caught off the surface, I mean, quite a lot of lakes, they don't look like they're starving for oxygen. They're just on the surface. You know, you can see the vortexes, you see the occasional fin come out. You know, it's not like the mouths are out gasping. And then you see them boshing, but you know they're not going near the bottom. Yeah. You know, they look happy-ish, you know, but they're just not feeding and staying in the upper layers.
They're not feeding, they might be feeding something in the upper layers. And it's a good time for zigging, isn't it?
It is a very good time for zigging, and I didn't realise how many hatches come out this time of year, but there is a few. I mean, again, we've spoken about this before, but I'd like to either learn or speak to an expert that can tell you, you know, in November this is common, in December this happens.
Did I tell you about the December hatch?
Yes, you did. We have spoke about it before.
I think, you know, so that's in a really dope, deep reservoir on, say, a bright, sunny day. I think it fooled the insects into hatching, and as soon as they hit the surface, they die. But, you know, what I got from that is hatches to at least December. And this wasn't beginning, by the way. This was the Christmas holiday, just before the Christmas holiday started. So at least to basically the end of December.
Something else broadly regarding fish health and fisheries in general is KHV. We know we've had an outbreak this year, and I've seen that you're doing, you're trying to raise 20 grand for research, which, has anybody ever put money into research for KHV before?
Not to my knowledge. A friend of mine, Jack, who's based at Essex University, this all started with them looking at a research project which was going to be in Australia. Australian government were on a program to eradicate carp, and so they was going to inject KHV into the river systems to wipe them all out. And so Jackie come to me while he's waiting to, excuse me, can someone get me a tea, please? Whilst he was waiting to get the government funding, there was obviously an urgency to raise money because they had to move quick to go to Australia and take samples of these fish, and then after the wipeout, go back and take samples of the survivors. From that, identify the genes that were resilient to KHV, which could then, you know, carp could be bred with those genes, and so the problem would be solved long term. But what happened is the Australian government did a U-turn when someone pointed out to them that you're going to create a terrible problem with all these decomposing carp that might not necessarily rise to the surface. But the other point I observed was they're never going to wipe them all out anyway. So, but that's how it started, and so it's moved on a lot since then. And yeah, we're helping him get it off the ground and raise the money. So it's always CFAS, so everyone's involved here, with the ultimate aim of, like I say, the worst situation, the one that your heart falls, your stomach falls, drops down to your feet when you walk around the lake and all those cherished carp that you used to catch and the ones you wanted to catch, you're all floating up dead. You know, yeah. I've been there, you know, I've walked around the church, as you know, and you found 450s dead, and I wouldn't want anyone to go through that. And so KHV is so real and so potential danger. You know, you were talking a few weeks ago about that commercial lake where they was hit with it. I have to say, it's like so many things, bird flu and all that, it's all down to overcrowding and you know, the animals not being kept with respect and in reasonable conditions. You know? And so these commercial match type fisheries have a lot to answer for. You know, they're the ones that are, in my view, causing the problem, which then of course can turn up on a well managed, the best managed carp lake in the country, and cause a wipeout. But yeah, we're keen on it. I've gone up on my Facebook today because clearly a lot of people have not seen what we're trying to achieve. There's a Just Giving page and that. In fact, funny enough, Des Taylor emailed me this morning and said Rob Howe's seen it and wants to talk to me because he wants to put some money in the pot. So looking forward to that chat, Rob.
What sort of, I noticed you're doing some auctions. I noticed you can get in an Urban Banks. You can bid for to appear with Carl and Alex in one of their videos. You can fish New Year on the Church and the Cops. There's a lot of things you're putting up here.
Cameras, face photography session with Ollie, as you say, session with Annan and Ollie on the Church, I think. It's like the big one. It's got to be to appear on Urban Banks, surely, you know.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, that was messed up. You know, a guy bid 2 grand, but he typed it wrong and put it down as 20 grand, you know, and so that immediately frightened everyone off, you know. So he spoke to me, I didn't mean to do that, I wanted it for 2 grand, we thought it might go higher, so. Come on, everybody, you know, if you just go and Just Giving and put a fiver in, you might be protecting your fishery in the future, or at least we're teaming up, all being carp banging together and protecting the whole nation's future.
Yeah, I'll put a link for the Just Giving page up. There's a free prize draw as well, isn't there? If you donate £10 or more.
£10, yeah, yeah.
All you have to do is to donate £10 to enter. And you'll be drawn out. And what's that a prize for, that one? Is that the...
I can't forget, sorry. I've forgotten, sorry. So many prizes being put up.
So I'm just getting the page
was,
up
was it, was it a membership of Royston, one of the prizes, was it?
There were so many. I mean, let's have a look here. Read more. It's for the... the Nash Mega Social Weekend that you're doing at Royston, which is £200 a place. You're giving away two places for that. And you can enter by donating a minimum of £10. There's a page on justgiving.com. And it's, who's it under? Is it on Nash? I don't know. I'm going to donate £10 in a minute.
Thanks, Simon.
Yeah. £809 collected currently of £20,000. Come on, guys.
Come on, guys. Funny story. You just made me think, yeah. Children need a pill at the weekend. I'm a soppy sod. I cry at ET. I'm watching that program. Some of those kids, it was awesome. So, I'm really doing my texts and making donations. And I look around at Dixie, and she's been on the phone for about 15 minutes. I said, what are you doing, Dixie? He said, I'll just have to keep making donations. I said, can I point out, I pay the phone bill. Yeah, I didn't mind for a good cause. He goes, you know, to me, oh, do you? I said, well, you know, you don't pay yourself.
I just want to give a shout out to Andrew Fryer. Andrew Fryer's made a £50 donation saying his local club water is going through a tough time with this at the moment. He's seen the effects it has on a wild scale of situations. Such a good course, it needs research ASAP. All the best, lads. So yeah, shout out to Andrew with his top donation of £50.
Well done, Andrew. Thanks pal.
And get yourself on there as well. It's all it's for a very good cause. Every single person listening to this Carpcast could potentially be affected by it one day, and you know, Kevin and the Nash guys are all giving up time and actual products in certain cases, and you know, giving a lot of high value stuff to try and raise this £20,000. So the least we can all do as anglers is support it, I think.
Well, I would point out it generally seems to be manifesting around late summer, early autumn.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a relatively new phenomenon. You know, I think the first case actually was identified in the UK, although it's all over the world in the 90s. But it seems to me that we're hearing a lot more about it in recent years, and it's always in this late summer, early autumn period. So again, is that being exacerbated by, if it is global warming, whatever it is that's going on, but these much warmer summers and autumns we're having. So I don't think the problem's going to go away, stay the same. I think it's just going to get worse and worse. So we need to jump on this.
Yeah, especially if we've got people there prepared to do the work. They just need funding. Then, let's get stuck in. Moving on, and I know after the ever-interesting Frank Warwick conversation that we have regular, you've got some comments on his observations of big fish sitting off the bait to allow the younger fish to feed. We had lead discussions and all sorts. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, my thoughts are, I could listen to Frank all night. He's just a fascinating character. Fascinating. You know, I hope the bloke's still married after, the start of that conversation, by the way. He got a bit close to the mark, didn't he? But bless him, I've known Frank for a long time. You can only respect him. He's had some pretty off-the-wall things in the past, I must say, but truly one of the great thinkers of the sport. Massive respect for me. Yeah, he was talking about the big fish sitting off the baited area. It's something most of us know, but I don't think it's down to anything to do with carp anglers or rigs, because we noticed on the office lake, for the listeners who don't know, behind our offices we've got a lake where we don't fish for the fish. They're for first bait testing. We know them so well, we can generally get an indication of how they react to a bait, whether we might be onto some new ingredient. And because they're not fish for, we know it's natural how they're looking at this bait, and they're not fearful of it. So, but with those fish, if you put bait out, it's always the young hooligans that roar in, and the big fish naturally sit off the area. And like I say, they've never been fished for. It's just a natural habit of carp. I wonder if they just, I've always took the view, they don't want to compete with the young ones. Let them, steam in, compete with each other, burn energy as well as eating. And then when they drift out, the big ones move in, and clearly there's enough food left for them to benefit from it.
Hmm. I've noticed. I don't think the big fish set off because they're riggy or anything like that. You know, I just think some fish are loners, and whether it's a greed thing, they don't like feeding with the others. But I find the fish are never too far from the main group of fish.
I agree with that, Jamie. It's not a loner thing. It's definitely not a loner thing. I'd say, you know, for example, at one time I had 4 30s in the office lake and 3 or 4 big 20s, and the rest were singles or doubles. That group that I just mentioned would always sit off and just wait until all the others had finished and gone, and then they would move in.
I spoke about this before, but the lake that Roger runs, Dead Man's, every year he would fill it in, you know, usually a good time of year in the autumn or something. He'd do a little baiting campaign, tip a cooler box of hemp and some boilies in every day for a week, and then fish it, and he would usually catch the entire stock. Back then there were about 25, 30 originals. He'd normally catch them all over either a 3-night session 1 week and finish it off, you know, like the following week. And there were 2 big ones in there, like significantly bigger than all the others. Both went sort of 40 or scraper 40, one just under, one just over. And one used to get caught first off the spot, and the other one used to be the last fish off the spot. And it would always come after, it was the halfling, it would always come after you think it had finished. And then it'd go quiet for a bit, you're thinking, right, it's done now. And then you'd get the bite from the big one, and then you knew it was finished. That was the end of that spot, or end of that little campaign.
Well, actually, you know, it's in the book I'm writing now. I'm writing about Warnwell. And at least 3-4 times, I can't remember myself now, Herman was caught within 24 hours after I'd left. And at the time, I was just smashing the place, you know, putting in a lot of bait because the bait was getting eaten, and the fish would drift off, but as soon as I put more bait out, they'd be back. You know, and several, at least couple sessions, several days before I packed up, Herman was rolling just off my baited area, you know, just thinking any moment, and it never happens, you know, and I'd leave, and then, say, one session in particular, I got a phone call the next evening from Nick the Baitish, you know, and Herman had come out from my spot. You know, so sitting there for days, wouldn't come into the area because I'm keeping that that swim topped up, and so it kept the doubles and 20s feeding. Now, the interesting thing about Warnwell, it always fascinated me, you had Herman and Bertha, right? There's an island in the middle of Warnwell. If one of those carp was caught from one side of the island, the other one would never be caught from that side. It was a nightmare, because if you're on one side of the lake and Bertha, I was after Herman, and Bertha come out, it was always packed. I'm trying to find a space, you know, on the other side of the island, you know, because I've got to get there, because that's where Herman's going to come out. Yeah, mad. It's almost as if they didn't like each other, or they split it up into territories. But
I think that's more likely. You know, St. Ives used to be the same. There's 2 big ones in there. Yeah. And one had its own group of fish, the other had its other, and they'd never get caught together. If you caught one of the fish that belonged to, say, the Black Pigs group, you know, you knew you weren't on the other group. It used to chill with 6 or 7 fish. Each of the big ones had its own firm, as it were. And, you know, and I think, as we've said before, when a big fish dies, another one always takes its place, because I think there is a pecking order even with carp. You get the main one, then you get the ones that follow it around.
Well, you're trying to figure this out with what we're saying. That can be a pecking order, you know, so you go, when, you know, the big ones are patiently waiting for the younger ones to have their feed and move off. You know, so much you still don't know. It's so fascinating.
Yes, certainly. You mentioned the key crate before. I know you've got all the new machines running up at Nash Bait now. Is it all full steam ahead?
Well, it was until a metal rod dropped off the mixer last week and got into the brand new super machine and basically smashed one of the screws. They sorted that out, and then I got the phone call last night from Gary. Now all the screws are crashed, so they thought the first screw could have been much damage, and the glass, maybe it was out of balance. It's now trashed a lot. We've got to send someone over to Germany this weekend to pick up a new set. And the irony of it is, we've had that mixer, and the mixer's not new. We've had the flipping thing 20 years, never had an issue with it. And then this bit of metal's falling off and trashed the machine. But that's manufacture and production for you. But yeah, we'll be getting to really rock and roll and get a lot of bait out now, because one effect of the move was that basically we had no stock left by the time we sorted the move out. But yeah, we're flat out now. I know you've been patiently waiting for some of your key clay competition people, but that's for another reason, Jamie. I'm continuing to listen to feedback and working hard with Gary to tweak the mix, you know, so it hasn't, not mind-blowing results, but frankly speaking, on other waters it hasn't performed to the absolute best against other baits. So that is the thing about a carp bait, getting it to, you know, perform as best as you can on as many different types of water.
Yeah, I spoke about this with Gary recently and a few other people. You know, it's a Yorkshire lake is going to be a different pH and makeup and substrate to a, you know, an irrigation pond in Essex or Kent, or you know, a Shropshire mere, or you know, a gravel pit in the Colne Valley. They're all going to be very slightly different. So I guess there's a bit of tweaking to be done to get a bait to perform better than other baits on a multitude of different scenarios. I guess that's a bit of a headache, is it, till you get it right?
It's one of them, you know, with the key, for example, you know, I was very clear that it wouldn't work everywhere. In fact, I went to great efforts to honestly put that across on my Facebook before we launched it, because I didn't want anglers all jumping on it. In fact, you know, I said at the time, look, this is a bait that catches the biggest or the rarely caught, you know, but it's not a runs bait. If you want a runs bait, use TG Active. You know, I really wanted people to make the right bait selection, and it's so hard that, you know, there's so many reasons why you need to think about bait selection. You know, it may be, as you say, for the type of water you're fishing, pH or whatever, but also the way you fish. You know, Alan is about full on looking, finding feeding fish that you probably see, and yeah, so he doesn't need a food bait. You know, he's not going on a campaign, he's not trying to stab his bait. For him, the best thing in the world is citrus, you know, and he proves that. But you know, anglers could watch Alan, think, wow, that citrus catches a load of fish, and go on it, but they're session anglers, you know, and not applying the food bait. So there's a lot of things that go into this, but there is certainly ingredients that seem to work across almost the total spectrum of fisheries, you know. And so our aim, or always our target generally with a bait, with the exception of the key, because like I said, that was such an awesome big fish catcher, or rarely caught catcher, that is the exception. But generally with mash bait, we're trying to get a bait that more or less will work everywhere.
Yeah. So we've been 45 minutes here. Is there any burning topics that we get out of the way? I mean, we're going to save the rig one, aren't we, which we were going to talk about.
This could be our shortest one ever. I'm not boring the readers. But,
not at all.
Just so really flat out in my own world with the book now, and to say a bit of this cage, plus... as you know, I've been running trade shows, they've just come to an end now, so we've had all that to contend with. You know, it's just really don't really know what's going on in the world, you lot.
Well, we know one big thing that's gone on in the world today, but we'll stay away from politics just now, especially American politics, I think.
We absolutely have to. I thought Frank's comments on heavy leads were bob on as well, by the way. Seems to me there's two types of angler. There's the ones that catch them on the rig, and there's the ones that believe the hook link tensions and catch them on the lead. I'm not going to go into this too much, because I think, as I say, we'll save that one for Roger, but I am certainly in the Frank Wright camp, and it is stunning the difference it makes if you up from 4 ounce to even 4.5 or preferably 5. A lot of anglers just can't get their head round heavy weights like that. Well, I'm only casting 20 yards, for example. It's nothing to do about casting. It's about it's about pulling that hooking on the initial pricking. And my focus on anger has always been to take that route so they can't get rid of flipping things as quick. But I did notice that seemingly I got a lot less action, and the feeling that I've been done because I got the odd bleep, or finding it by my rig of all times, a telltale rig, that they can much easier get rid of a lead up to 3.5 than they can 4. But when you go well above that, you know, it's catching out. But it's only because, same old thing, they've been conditioned to it, and you know, there's not many people using leads that way. Which reminds me of something I did want to talk about.
Yeah.
So only several times in, say, recent, in, say, the last 10, 15 episodes, there's been references to carp being stupid.
Yeah. Yep.
Haven't got a brain. I absolutely disagree with that. I think they are so in tune with the environment and so damn clever. I sometimes have the opposite view, and you know, watching their behaviour, watching them detecting lines or, you know, or what I'm doing, wonder how we do catch them, how suddenly they seem to throw, go stupid for a minute, if that's a way to put it, you know, and get caught. But you know, I've got a simple analogy. If every night you eat your dinner, yeah, everything's great, and then I'll tell you a story, actually. This is where this comes from. I was on a flight, and it was one of the cheap airlines, I won't mention them, and not only is the food you buy well below par, from in my opinion, but also it's a fortune. So Dixie goes out and, you know, just buys something from the supermarket, like, and in this particular case it was a tuna pasta, you know, something decent to eat, and it come with a plastic fork that you folded and clipped in, you know, and I'm hoofing this down because I was so hungry, but somehow the clip detached and I stabbed myself in the fork, in the mouth of the fork, right? Plastic didn't do any damage, didn't particularly hurt, but you know, well, you know, it was an enjoyable experience. And so put it back together, carried on eating, fork was faulty, bang, I stabbed myself again, this time a bit harder, made my eyes water. So I thought, sod this, and I, you know, discarded the fork and let it in my fingers instead, you know, because I didn't want to get stabbed by that bloody fork again. And I think that's a kind of good analogy. Yeah, so you know, carp's getting away with it, no issues, and suddenly has an issue. And you either learn from that issue and not make the mistake again, or you might just think, oh, well, unlucky, whatever, and it get caught again. But rarely will he fall a third time, you know. And I just don't think people can suggest carp is stupid just because they get caught out. They're getting caught out because generally, something new is being put in their faces that they're not used to. I'm talking, you know, I'm talking clever fish on pressured waters here, not runs waters where they're starving and they've got to take more chances. But you know, when you're on those big, riggy pressure, well, not big, when you're on those real pressured, riggy waters, like the Copse, for example, which, in my opinion, is one of the hardest waters in the country now, which is what makes it so awesome to fish. You know, if they've got everything chucked at them by me and my mates, the likes of you. Not your mate, James, but, you know, those fish are... those fish are absolutely clued up, and sometimes they take my breath away by, and I say it, their level of intelligence.
That lake.
Does that classify as a semi rank, by the way? I've always wanted to have a rank on carp.
Yeah, I think it probably does. that Copse has got significantly harder. I've seen it with my own eyes just this year with it being fished, probably more than it has done for a long time. You know, from the results I had in January and February to, you know, a couple of times I've been on recently, it's definitely a different lake to what it was, even, you know, prior to you having it open to people being able to fish. It's changed in the space.
I love you, mate. I thought I'd give you a gift and mug them last winter. You know, in essence, they've hardly been fished for like 6 years, you know, 5-6 years, yeah, as you say. And it actually hasn't had an enormous amount of pressure this year.
And it's done what, maybe?
People have been on?
It's done
10, 12, 14 people, maybe. You know, but yeah, they don't take long to, you know, think, oh, they're after us again.
I think it's worse in a small lake, the fact that they react so quick. I mean, I've fished lakes where fish have never been, you know, the big fish especially, maybe it's a rare one, or once a year or twice a year, it's never come off the same spot again. You know, you catch it off the spot, that's the only time it's going to get caught off that. So the cops, where, I mean, there aren't 10 spots around the lake, especially at the minute with, you know, the weed and stuff. Yes, there are fish showing in other areas where there's no real fishable spots, unless you're going to fish a zig below the surface, or, you know, a chod a foot below the surface, lay on top of the candy floss weed and stuff. But generally, there might only be 10 spots around the lake maximum at any one time. So what happens when the fish have been caught off all those spots?
You've got to find a way of fishing the spot where they're free, where they're feeding. That's what I always said about a chod rig. Yeah, it's not an amazing rig. In actual fact, I think it's a very poor hooker. Yeah, I'm about bleeps, and when I go on a rig, I get a bleep, and it doesn't convert to a take. I know they're getting away with it, and fish get away a lot of time on that chod, but where I'm going with this is, the chod was such an awesome catcher, because suddenly it's being put where fish felt safe, you know, because anglers weren't getting into and finding a way to present their baits right in those spots. Yeah, but of course it's... on a lot of waters, it's had its day, because, you know, they now realise in that so-called previous safe area, it's not safe for them anymore, you know, and so they won't get caught out in the chod. But for sure, as you and me know, Jamie, they're feeding there somehow, somewhere. It's just finding, and I haven't got the answer, by the way, it's just finding a way of attacking them, you know, where they're feeding.
Yeah. Yeah,
that tunnels as well, you know, under the weed.
Yes, I have seen that.
Yeah, how the hell do you deal with that? Yeah, I'll tell you another one also, that weed drops at night. I remember down a lake once, and say, you know, sowing to a bleep is clearing the curves, and I noticed that this is March, April, I noticed that for the last hour of light, I was getting bleeps, and it's doing my head, you know, doing the rigging, what's going on there? And then I realised it's because I was fishing over weed, and it was a weed dropping down, and, you know, giving me the detection. Just last about an hour until the light went, and then it was all right.
Roger and I have been having a bit of a laugh recently. We've both had situations. I've had it loads of times over the years, but situations, we call it the mysterious vanishing spot. So you find a spot, and you know, it might be a rock hard bit, and you get a few taps of gravel or whatever. It's just the perfect spot, and you know it's there. You fish it for 2 days, and then it's gone. Like, it's just vanished, and you'll have 100 casts, and you can't find it. And I'm sure it's just been closed up by weed or something, or I don't know what it is, but I've had it.
Said, you can have a spot in the day. You can have a spot in the day because the weed's standing up.
Yeah.
You know, little gravel. You know, you can get the lead down between the weed. Yeah. You know, but then when darkness comes, the weed's dropped down. It's like a blanket of weed over it.
Yeah.
You know, so in this tunnel thing, how the hell you ever deal with that one? I remember being. It was Horton, actually. Yeah. I was up a tree, looking out across a part of the lake. It was just sodden weed within a couple. 2-3 foot of the surface, and I watched this carp swing on top of the weed, and there was like a darker round circle of weed, and it just upended and went into it and disappeared. I hadn't realised it was a hole in the weed, you know, and it never come out again, you know, and, you know, so it swam along this tunnel somewhere, you know. I've definitely seen that in lake, carp just disappear into a hole and you see them come out the other end, like 20, 30 yards away.
Yeah.
How the hell do you present a boat in that?
Yeah, I've seen that happen a number of times. I know Scott Lloyd, a young lad that you enjoyed listening to on the Carpcast, he's got a Facebook page called A Carp's Eye View, because he does a lot of videos from under the water and stuff. Right. His year on... his year on Stone Acres, where he caught everything last year, he had some of those carp tunnels that he'd got the camera down and underneath, and he found a few of them. It was pretty interesting to watch. Unfishable, you can never fish near him, but you certainly see the patrol routes where they're going through the weed, and like you say, they just make themselves roads basically around the weed, and if you're lucky enough to be able to find, you know, an exit point or an entrance point and somewhere you can fish, then they've never not caught me fish, you know, when I found something like that. It always does the bite.
It brings a new meaning to bait boats. You know, you're around, you don't need a bait boat, you need a submarine, don't you? Send it down the tunnels. And as you was going on about that, well, I have said recently, you know, I was still on it, on the big pits. Blow your bait boat, the biggest edge you'd have would be one of those flipping drones. Yeah, I'll never forget. I at one time had helicopter lessons until I realised I was bloody useless. Those things are so sensitive. I kept on turning the thing on its tail, and it nearly wiped me, the pilot, out, and half a rail it. But I don't know if you would have noticed, but as you walk down to the cops, the right hand hill, the middle of it is clear, because that's where my mate used to drop the helicopter. And first time he come in, we went out over the cops and the church. I was gobsmacked. We was hovering, you know, above the lake, and the carp just didn't know what to do. They just sat there rigid, and you could see their gills opening and closing, their barbels. You know, I just, you know, you know, you get up high up a tree, you get a better view, but you get right up above a lake, 30, 50 foot or whatever. You know, it is unbelievable. That water's got relative clarity. You can see every fish in the lake. No wonder Coleman's are so effective. You know, so blow your bait boat, just go and get a drone, you know, and on the big lakes, you'd be able to spot them in minutes and they wouldn't be on them.
Yeah, and I think that is probably an extremely likely scenario already being played out on many lakes, because drones are extremely affordable these days. You know, the good quality ones with the cameras that are beaming back to an iPad.
£700, mainly.
Yeah, you can get. I bought one with a camera. It didn't live stream; it just recorded. So you have to watch it back when it gets back. Well, I bought one for £100. You know, and the ones with the GPS and stuff that automatically come back to you. Yeah, they're very reasonably priced.
Well, I think I'm right in saying that you can send it up and preset it to completely go over and map the lake for you. Yeah, just like they're doing with bait boats. So yeah, send it up, you know, send it round, and just look at the whole lake being viewed and find out where the carp are. Incredible edge.
Program the digits into your GPS on your bait boat, put it in the water, put your rig in it, press go. We have to worry about any skill whatsoever. How about that?
Then get yourself a little robot so you don't have to get cold, and you fucking stay at home watching these benders or whatever, and just, you know, just get the fish held up. Yeah, the robot's got your face on it, Jamie. Plus, of course, I still reckon the scars and abrasions from when you was down here. Yeah, job done. Job done.
I think we best leave this one right there. We can't follow that, can we? We'll speak next time, Kevin.
Glad you got your glasses back, though.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
So big thank you to Kevin. Always insightful. I always enjoy my chats with Kevin. And hopefully going to be seeing him again this week when I go fishing in a few hours from having recorded this. But yeah, Kevin has been instrumental, along with a lot of other people, of helping us hit mark the magic 50,000 downloads for October, which is incredible. It's almost 10,000 up on the previous month. We had two individual shows that hit over 10,000 each, which has never happened. Our previous record was like 7,500, was it? Something like that.
Yeah, maybe a bit more over the long term, but in the short term, and I'll say the Julian Cundiff chat, which also coincided with the first capture of Big Rig, you know, that's over 10,000 on Libsyn alone, and, you know, the middle SoundCloud is added on to that.
So yeah. We shout out to all the new listeners, because there must be loads of you, because the numbers are snowballing pretty incredibly. Last 3 months, they're shooting up rapidly, aren't they? I mean, to hit 50,000 downloads in a month, that's pretty incredible, I think.
Yeah, we're turning into a real podcast.
Maybe.
A real media entity.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin said to me on numerous occasions, I mean, one of the reasons why he loves the Carpcast is because you get to hear people in depth, you hear the personality, you hear how they're talking about stuff, you know, you get to know somebody on a deeper level than maybe reading a magazine article. And when I was down there recently, you know, Kevin said to me, in all the years he's written articles in hundreds of magazines, you know, over the last 30 years, never has he had the feedback of when he's on the Carpcast. So he gets 3, 4, 5 calls a week, plus emails and God knows what, people just ringing to ask him a question about something he said, or compliment him, or whatever, or to question him. He says he's never had that over any magazine article anywhere. So it just goes to show the power of the podcast. We champion this podcast and others because I think podcasts are great. I just don't listen to the radio anymore. Listen to stuff I'm interested in, as I guess you do.
Yeah, any time. Well, if I do listen to the radio, it's usually 5 Live or Talk Sport, and I'm sick of hearing about the American election and Donald Trump, so I've just not been listening to 5 Live, although I did turn it on the other morning. They were reporting on Conor McGregor's victory.
Yeah. I don't even take a radio fishing anymore.
No, I just download a bunch of podcasts onto the iPad. It's on the side of the bucket and playing away, usually Joe Rogan or some old wrestling stuff.
Yeah. Yes. We've had it. Do you know what we've had? We're only on the 14th of November. We've only released one show in November so far, and we're on 20,000 downloads. I'm just looking at the stats now. It's incredible. I wonder if we could beat our record. It seems to be going up every month. I mean, where we put 9,000 and something from September into October, we put 9,000 downloads on. I can only assume a lot of that is people that are discovering us. They're also then downloading the older shows, because that's the beauty of the podcast, is it's there forever, isn't it? You know, you can go back and listen to previous ones.
Yeah, it's like when you know, we all have a magazine, to you read an article by someone and then it's gone. You can't track back and, you know, you can go and buy back issues if they're still around, but you know, with a podcast, it's like, well, I did it with I forgot his name now. There's someone on the Joe Rogan podcast and he mentioned he'd been on before, so I was like scrolling back, I was there again, listen to that one.
Exactly. If you read a really good article by an angler that you've not really heard of, it's very difficult to go and get all their back issues, you know, everything they've ever written. It's very difficult to get that, so but anyway, to everybody that's helped get this podcast to this point, we're close to 500,000 all-time downloads as well. Let's have a look, because since we had iTunes, which was a good few months after we started, because it took ages to get iTunes up, didn't it?
Yeah, you've got to have three full episodes to even be considered to get on there, and then jump through quite a few hoops, but we did it.
Let's have a look overall. So overall we're just over 76,000 on 76,000 on SoundCloud, and lifetime we are 398,000. So yeah, 470,000
shoes and socks are off
approximately. So by the end of next month we should have 500,000 downloads.
Oh, that's quite a few candles to put in the cake.
Wow, we need to celebrate, don't we? 500,000 at some point.
Yeah, definitely. What should we do? Should we? I don't know. Let's go fishing.
Yeah, maybe we can give something away. Was there any way of working out who our 500,000 download is?
I don't think there is. I mean, iTunes don't give you direct stats; they go through Libsyn. And we don't know who's subscribed on iTunes or even the others. We just don't get the actual names, do we?
No. I can see where people are from. I wonder if there's any way of telling. It's probably going to happen by the end of December, I reckon. Mid to the end of December. Maybe we'll do a Christmas giveaway, something. Maybe we'll just pick somebody randomly for something good. Maybe they can get some one-on-one tuition or something. Are you going to start your coaching back up again next year, Mark?
Maybe. You know, certain things have to, certain stars have to align before I get the time to do that sort of thing. But I hope to. It was enjoyable, very, very rewarding. But like I say, time is the key.
The key. A couple of link tenuous links here. One is Key Cray.
I'm glad you got it.
Key Cray is something you might get for free should you book a coaching session with me. Quite a lot of people have been asking if I would do coaching. I've kind of ignored them all so far because I didn't think I was going to have time, and time's precious enough as it is. I'm prepared to do some in the northwest at Clearwater Fisheries, which is a set of lakes recently purchased by a good friend, Alex, who has bought the entire business up there, including a fantastic lake known as Jimmy's, which is like the main carp lake. Got fish to over 40 pounds in there, and Alex is going to be the new sponsor of the Carpcast. He's going to be like our headline sponsor, so everything we do is going to have Clearwater Fisheries. We're looking at doing some socials there next year. I mean, the lakes are fantastic. The cafe stroke restaurant up there is absolutely fantastic. It's got top chef, really good food. There's a bit of a tackle shop up there. You can buy all sorts of bits and bats. And I'm going to be doing some coaching up there as well. So if you are interested, either you and a friend, it's cheaper if there's two of you, you and a friend do want to do either 24 hours or 48 hours with me, I'll provide the bait, which will more than likely be Key Cray or something similar, and I'll provide all the tickets. Then get yourself over to our website, www.thecarpcast.com. Have a look in the shop. You can actually purchase some Key Cray in there, the only place you can buy it if you're not a Nashfield tester, which is the fantastic new bait from Nash, which is 50% crayfish meal. It's catching all sorts of fish from all over Europe at the minute. Alan showed me a folder absolutely full of catch reports of this bait, which is completely original. It's got using ground crayfish meal as instead of the marine fish meal, which is obviously a freshwater crustacean species. So it seems to be working really well. I'm taking it fishing with me this week, and for only £80 or £79.99, you can have 10 kilos of either 15 or 20 mil, or there is a package on there now for 5 key of 15, 5 key of 20 mil, including a tub of pop-ups, and it's £80 delivered direct to your door, which is £8 a kilo plus the pop-ups free, including delivery, which is fantastic. It's your only chance to get hold of this bait, because it's not in shops till next May, I believe. If you'd like to do that, go to the Carpcast website, www.thecarpcast.com, along with lots and lots of other stuff in the shop. You find plenty of bits and bobs in there. People have been asking us for extra tubs of pop-ups of the Key Cray as well, and also the Key Cray signal arouser liquid. All that's in the shop now as well. I've managed to get some product codes off Nash for the people that have been asking for those. Get yourself in there. Also doing a special offer on Kevin Nash's fantastic book, Memoirs of a Carp Fisher, The Demon Eye. That was Kevin's latest book. He is writing a new one currently, I believe. But if you would like a special offer, it's only $19.99 in the shop. And that's, or if you can find one, they're like £30 plus everywhere else. I think the cheapest I've seen one, saw one somewhere for like $27.99, something like that. So yeah, you can have them for the bargain price of $19.99 from our Carpcast shop. Get yourself over there and have a look. Like I say, if you want to go fishing with me, you can do that. I'm sure if you pester Mark enough, he might start his coaching up again. Mark is a level 2 qualified coach, aren't you, Mark?
I am. I also supply Jaffa Cakes.
Yes. And you've got a website as well, haven't you?
It's offline at the minute, but yes, I do have one. It's kind of it's waiting in the wings.
Okay, well, let us know when you start that.
I certainly will.
Fancy doing a listener's question?
Yeah, we've got one. It's kind of Matt Jarvis. He sneaked two questions in with one, so we'll do it in two parts. Question for you guys. On lots of waters, you have to book a peg in advance of fishing. How do you approach a lake based on not being able to move or pick the swim you want? Now, me personally, I'd approach the lake by not approaching the lake and fishing somewhere else where I could do what the hell I want.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I wouldn't approach the lake is exactly how I would do it.
Yeah, I thought you'd be exactly the same. But if you did have to fish the lake where you were, your swim was predetermined, you couldn't move, you had to make the most of that swim, how would you go about it? What would you do? Doesn't say how long a session, but say if you were just there for 24 hours.
I'd research it. I'd find out as much as I could beforehand. I mean, you have to book a swim. I don't know how far in advance you have to book the swim, but if you can book it within sort of 4 or 5 days, i.e. of a weather forecast, the first thing I would do is look at the conditions and try and base an area of the lake. You know, if it's springtime and it's warm, the fish are going to be in the shallows, find whatever area of the lake has shallows. You know, if there's a new warm southerly wind coming or forecast for later in the week, and I'm going on the Friday and it's forecast to start Friday morning, I'd be picking a swim on the end of the wind. And I'd be looking for previous habits. You know, a lot of these very commercial fisheries that do this sort of thing, they have websites. You know, look at the catch reports, try and work out where the fish were coming from at that time of year. Fish have habits. They do similar things at similar times of years because it's governed by depth and, you know, water temperature and various other things. So, you know, try and get as much information as you can from catch reports from other anglers. Maybe visit the lake before. I mean, there's an extreme example of this, which is Rainbow Lake, isn't it? I mean, you have to book a year, 2 years in advance sometimes on there, and you have to book your swim. Now, again, people know what swims fish well at what times of year, you know, and they make their decisions based on that. But every swim's full. Sometimes you just have to go and make the best of it wherever you are. But the only thing you can do is follow the conditions, you know, try and get on the ends of nice winds, on the back of cold winds. You know, if the fish, it's at a time of year where the water's getting cold, and have a think where the fish might be in deeper water, or that's about all you can do. Yeah, or find a better lake to fish.
Yeah, I would say the one saving grace is a lot of the day ticket venues where you have to book swims are probably quite well stocked anyway, so you will still be in with a chance. You're not, hopefully not going to be stuck in a duff swim with no options.
Yeah, I would, as I said, find out as much as you can about the lake. If there are certain flyers, then try and get in those flyers.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, when you see on Facebook, you know, I'm not naming any lakes, it'll sound like I'm slating them, but I'm certainly not, because for a couple of lakes I've fished in the past before they got this busy. But when you see a Facebook post and it says, 2 swims left this weekend, ring so-and-so to book. Yeah. I was like, I can't think of anything. Just not for me. Anyway, no.
Although something I've found fishing matches and stuff years ago is quite often the last swim on the lake is the one that does the fish. As we know, carp like to get out of the way.
Yeah, that is very true. So we move on to the second part of Matt's question.
Yeah.
It says, if you turn up at a lake and can't find any sign of fish, how do you choose a swim and what baiting approach would you use? Now, I'm going to dive into this one. The first is 3 things, wind, weed and snags. You know, both are obvious, and as long as you've got your eyes open, they're pretty easy. You know, as you just mentioned, get on the end of a warm wind, back of a cold wind. You know, in weed, you know, you can see it on the surface a lot of the time, you know, with pads, reeds, Canadian when it reaches up, and snags. You know, carp love weed and they love snags. You know, careful when you're fishing snags, obviously. And then there's other things. You know, you look for the bird life. You know, bird life can give away so much. You know, they can be diving all on one spot, are they coming back up with boilies? You know, a lot of places I know, every big pit I've fished, there's been carp and ducks have followed each other around. I'm pretty sure it's the carp that follow the ducks. But it definitely happens. And baiting approach, I'd just look a stinky stingle out to start with and watch. And then I'd watch it again.
Yeah, I would go against putting a lot of bait out when I'm unaware of the situation, because you can't take the bait back out again once you put it in. You know, I'd fish for a bite. I always fish for something around it, you know. I'll always stick half a dozen spots, but I won't top it up until you know, I've had some indication of fish, and then, you know, keep increasing the bait. If you're on fish and you're catching fish, I don't think baiting up spooks them, so I would rather start off with a little bit, entice them in, and you know, increase the bait as you're picking up fish. Yeah, and we've pretty much covered everything there. I mean, it's a bit of a watercraft question, which is a bit longer, you know, how long's a piece of string type question. But yeah, like you say, look for features, look for snags, look for a reason for the fish to be in a place, and obviously look for fish. I mean, I remember walking around lakes, big lakes with not many carp in, you know, and you feel like it's a needle in a haystack. And, you know, I determined, walk around all day thinking I'm not setting up somewhere until I see something. Don't see anything, and then I'll start looking for other signs of activity, i.e. small fish, bits, ducks, just something else. If a water looks completely dead of carp, I'll look for the next best thing, which might be, you know, all the birds are in one area, or it could be that I keep seeing bits roll, you know. That, I mean, that might not tell you if there's any carp there, but the bits might be there for a reason. The bits might be there because the water's a little bit warmer, or you know, it's better than nothing, is what I'm saying.
Definitely. And
sometimes areas or lakes look more active than others, I think.
Yeah, the active's a key word. And also, as I mentioned, singles, I'll do that because then you're not committing to any one area. Chances are you're going to get it wrong first off. We all do. But if you've put a, you know, a few bits of bait in, you're going to think, oh, well, I've baited up this area, I don't want to move. Just singles, it is as simple as wind them in, hook them up and get off. You know, the best pieces of kit you can have are a good pair of walking boots and a good pair of eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. As far as listeners' questions,
We did have a bit of a debate on the Catcast fan page that Heapy Bob, our friend, runs for us, but it was pretty much what we spoke about last week, so I did put it in the notes, but it was all about basically why places have been fishing crap.
We've spoke about this quite a bit, haven't we? I think Nashi covered it in one of the recent ones, and we spoke about it last week. And when I spoke to Kevin, I recorded Kevin for this one, obviously, and he agreed with you. So, you know, all the sort of points you made last week. So, I think we've had a few questions. I need to actually go through them, I think. And let's get a few out for next week. But we've been a couple of hours here, so I think we can pretty much wrap it up, can't we?
Yeah, I think we can. And are you going straight down to coast now, or are you going to get a couple of hours kip first?
Yeah, I'm trying to get 3 or 4 hours sleep and then get going. That wasn't my car horn. It must have been your phone.
No, it was a mate of mine texting me. It's on about some fish called Single Scale's been out of the motorway pond a couple of weeks back.
Ah, where's that fish called Orange Spot at 51 that came out this morning? Is that an Eric's fish? Was it
somewhere? Orange Spot? Orange, I don't know, I've not seen that one.
Ah, yeah, 51 this morning. Lakes are just starting to do the odd bite again, I think. Cromwell did a few fish over the weekend, did about 10 fish, I think, in 24 hours. There is light at the end of this month-long barren tunnel, and I hope I'm going to go and catch a fish this week. I'm going to try. I've got the buzz. Definitely going to try.
So. Cool. Well, good luck. And I'm going to try and drag my ass out for a day tomorrow. I need to do it.
Cool. Well, it's goodbye from him.
And goodbye from me.
Catch you later.
www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.